from the middle of, or the bottom of Lamed Tes Amud Beis. It's about 15 lines from the bottom or so. So the Gemara says, Mari Bar Isaac, Asa Le Acha Mi Bei Chozai. There was this guy, Mari Bar Isaac, and his supposed brother showed up from the town of Bei Chozai, Amar Le Plogli. And his brother says, I want you to divide half of the estate of our late father. Amar Le, Lo Yadanulach. Mari says to this guy, I don't know who you are. I never met you in my life. Asul kameder of chista amar lei shapir ka amar lach shene amar vayakir Yosef esachav vehim lohikiruhu malamid sheyatza below chasimas zakan uva abachasimas zakan. Rav Chista said it's a legitimate claim because it's possible that the two of you were separated when you were very, very little, and the last time you saw your brother, 40-50 years ago, he didn't have a beard and now he has a beard, so you don't recognize him. It's possible. So amar lei zil aisisade daachuat. So Rav Chista turns to this brother, to this supposed brother, and says you have to go bring aid him that you're his brother if you want to collect half the Yerusha. So Amar Lei, Isli Sadi, Vidacha Le Mine De Gavra Alimahu. So the brother says to Rav Chista, I have Edim. The problem is that they're too scared of testifying against Mari Bar Isaac, because Mari Bar Isaac was some kind of a mafia guy. He was a very violent guy, and people were scared of him. So Amar Lei Lidi Dei, so Rav Chista then goes to Mari Bar Isaac and says to him, Zil Ant Isi Sadi De Lava Chuchu. You need to now bring Edim that this guy is not your brother. So Amar Lei, Dina Hachi, Hamotzi Mechaver, Olav Araya. What happened to the rule of Hamotzi? What do you mean? It's incumbent upon him to bring the proof. I don't have to prove that he's not my brother. So Amar Leis, Rav Chista says, no. That's what I'm going to paskin for you and all of your violent mafia friends, because his edim are too intimidated to come and testify against you. So the only recourse is that you're going to have to prove that he's not your brother. So Amar Leis, sof asu sadeh v'lo masadeh. So Mari Bar Isaac said to Rav Chista, but okay, but even if my supposed brother has Edim, you just told me that they're too scared to come testify anyway. So in other words, he's not going to be able to provide Edim, and if I can't provide Edim, I'm not going to shell out any of the money to him. So Amar Lei Tarte Lo Avdis. Rav Chista said, no, it's not true, because even though the Edim that your supposed brother has may be scared of you, they're not going to do two wrongs. It's one thing for Edim to not testify, to abstain from testifying, but to actively testify falsely, that they're not going to do. So the Gemara says, actually what happened was, the Sofas Usade Da'achu. Eventually the Edim worked up the courage, and they eventually came to Beis Din and said, yes, this guy is in fact Mari Bar Isaac's brother. So Amar Lei Lifloglei Nami Mi Pardisei Uvustanei Deshasal. Once they've established that this guy was really his brother, so then he said, I also want you to give me half of all of the gardens and the orchards that you planted since our father's death. So Rav Chista said, Amar Lei Shapir Ka Amar Lach. This not he niach banim gedolim uktanim the hishbichu gedolim asanechasim hishbichu laemsa v'chein Amar Rabba hishbichu laemsa. Rav Chista said that your brother has a legitimate claim, because there's a Mishnah in Maseches Bava Basra that says the following. Let's say a father dies and he leaves over multiple children. Some of them are over bar mitzvah, some of them are under bar mitzvah. The children who are over bar mitzvah tend to the property, to the estate of the late father, and they cause certain enhancements to the field. So the Mishnah Bava Basra says that hishbichu la'emtza, that those enhancements are equally divided between the older brothers who actually worked on the field and the minor children who didn't do anything. So it's the same concept here too, that even though your brother had nothing to do with the field, you tended to it, you planted everything in the gardens and the orchards, your brother should still get a share. So Amar Lei Abaye mi dame hasam gedolim gabi ktanim yadi v'kamachle hacha miyada delichel. So Abaye pushes back on Rav Chista. He says, you can't compare the Mishnah of Bava Basra to this scenario of Mari Bar Isaac and his brother, because in the scenario of a Basra, the older brothers realized that they're tending to the field on behalf of their minor brothers. They were mocha. They said, oh yeah, of course we're going to allow our younger brothers to also get a portion of the enhancements. Mari Bar Isaac didn't know that his brother existed until 5 minutes ago, so obviously he never intended to be able to give part of that enhancement over to his brother. So the Gemara says, Yigalgal milsa umat lekame de Rabbi Ami Amar lehu gedola mizo amru shamin lehen ka'aris hashta didei lo yohavinan lehi. So the matter eventually came in front of Rabbi Ami, and Rabbi Ami said that in fact Mari Bar Isaac should at the very least be entitled to collect money as if he was a sharecropper. Meaning, even though we've established that this guy was really his brother, and even if you accept what it said that that his brother is entitled to some of the enhancements, but what about the fact that Mari Bar Isaac was the one working the land? He should at least be paid for his labor. He should be paid for all the expenditures that he had to expend to buy the shovels and whatever else in order to, you know, cause the land to be enhanced. So the Gemara says, Ahadru ahalikamei derev chista, amar lehu midamei, hasam birish rishus nachis hachalav berishus nachis ve'od katanu ve'in moridin karuv le'nichse katan. So then the matter came back to Rav Chisda. They told him what Rabbi Ami said, and Rav Chisda said that Rabbi Ami is wrong for two reasons. First of all, he says that because that scenario that Rabbi Ami was discussing is a case regarding a captive. Let's say, for example, a person was taken into captivity. So the Mishnah is discussed. Let's say their relatives go down and tend to his field while he's in captivity. So the din is that the relatives are entitled to be paid, to be compensated for their labor. So the reason why the relatives are entitled to compensation is because Bez didn't authorize them to go and tend to their relatives' field while he was in captivity. Here, no one authorized, the brother never authorized Mari Bar Isaac to go and tend to the field, obviously, because they never encountered each other until a few minutes ago. And moreover, says Rav Chisda, this brother who's now coming out of the woodworks is apparently a katan. The kid's under bar mitzvah anyway. And the din is that ein moridin karuv l'nichse katan. The din is that basically Bez Din does not allow relatives to go and tend to the field of a katan and then demand compensation for it. So the Gemara ends off the story by commenting, Ahadrua lekame de Rabbi Ami, Amar lu, lo saimu akame de katanu. Rabbi Ami says that they never completed the story for me. No one told me that the brother was a katan. Right, so he says, in other words, had I known the brother was a katan, of course, I would have paskin that Mari Bar Isaac is not entitled to any money for the work that he did on the field. Okay, says the Mishnah. Hamavkid peros etzel chavero, hareza yoti lo chesronos. It's a very, very complicated Mishnah Gemara, but basically, Mishnah says the following. Let's say Reuven goes ahead and deposits fruit, produce, whatever it is, by Shimon. So now it's time for Shimon to repay the produce. So let's say he pays either with the same produce or with different produce. So you have to factor in what the Mishnah calls the chesronos, the standard rate of decrease of produce. Produce is not going to stay the same over time. The longer produce stays out, the worse it's going to get qualitatively. So the question is, how exactly do you calculate the decrease in the rate of produce? So the Mishnah gives you specific calculations. L'chitim u'la'orez tisha chatzoi kabin l'chor. So when it comes to wheat and rice, it's 9.5 kav per kor, or 4.5 kav per kor. A kor is 180 kav. So 4.5 kav per kor is basically a 2.5% rate of decrease. L'sa'orin u'la'dochan tisha kabin l'chor. For barley and for millet, it's 9 kav per kor, which would be a 5% decrease year over year. L'chus min u'lezera pishtan, shalosh se'in l'chor. And for spelt and flax seed, it would be 3 sa'ah. Sa'ah is 6 kav, so that's 18 kav per kor, which again is 180 kav, which is again, which is a 10% rate of decrease year over year. Hakol lefi hamida v'hakol lefi hazman. And the Mishnah says cryptically that everything depends on the measurement and the time that elapsed. Again, the Gemara is going to explain all of these in a second. Then the Mishnah says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, v'chi ma'ichpas lehen la'achbarin, v'halo ochlos bein meharbeu vein mikima, ela eino yotzi lo chesronos, ela l'chor echad bilvad. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri takes issue with these specific calculations for different types of produce, because he says at the end of the day, the mice are going to consume this produce regardless of the quantity, whether you have a little bit of rice or a lot, or a little bit of barley or a lot, whatever it is, the mice will consume it, and you have to factor in that decrease of the mice coming and consuming your produce either way, and therefore, what is the rate of decrease that you should give? So Rabbi Yochanan ben Uri gives basically a flat rate. He says that you should basically just pay the equivalent of one kor. Whatever the standard rate of decrease is for one kor of produce, that's what you pay across the board. We don't start, drawing distinctions between different types of produce. And then finally, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, again, the Gemara is also going to explain this, but basically, if the amount of produce that the owner deposits by the shomer is a very significant quantity, we'll see in the Gemara exactly how much that is, so then when the shomer returns the produce, he doesn't have to pay or factor in any of the rates of decrease, because the produce is actually going to cause profit to the owner. And again, the Gemara will explain all of this. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Orez Tuva Chatzer. So going back to the first example in the Mishnah regarding rice, the Mishnah said that the standard rate of decrease for rice is 2.5% year over year, and apparently the Gemara says that rice diminishes at a much higher clip than that. So says the Gemara, no. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, but Orez Kalev Shanu. Our Mishnah was talking about shelled rice. So if the rice is shelled, then the standard rate of decrease is 2.5% per year. If it's unshelled, so we'll see in a second in the Gemara that it's actually going to be fall into the category of the 10% rate of decrease. Then we said Lechusman Ulezera Pishtan Gimel Se'in Lechor, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Chia. Zera Pishtan Bigivolin Shanu, Tanya Nami Hachi, Lechusman Ulazera Pishtan Bagivolin, Ula Orez She'enu Kalaf, Shlosha Se'in Lechor, when it comes to spelt, when it comes to flaxseed that's still on its stalk, and when it comes, as we just noted a second ago, to unshelled rice, the standard rate of decrease is, as we said, 3 sa'ab per kor, which is again a 10% decrease year over year. Okay, then we said, Hakolafi Hamida, Tana, Kain Lechol Kor Vechor, Vechain Lechol Shana Vishana. The Mishnah said that these rates of decrease are factored in for every measurement, meaning for every core, which is again, which is 180 kav, and it's also factored in year over year. This is the rate of decrease per year. So in other words, if Reuven deposits, a certain amount of rice by Shimon to watch for 5 years, so you have to factor in these rates of decrease every single year. That's how the calculations in the Mishnah work. Okay, then we said Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Tanya, Amar lo Rabbi Yochanan, harbe ovdos mehen, harbe mispazros mehen. So if you remember, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's issue with all these calculations in the Mishnah was that the mice will consume this produce regardless of the quantity that was deposited. It doesn't really make a difference how much you deposit, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri gave this like flat rate. He said that you have to consider the standard rate of decrease for a kor, and that's it. You don't start factoring in specific calculations. So the Chachamim respond to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri in his Braisa, and they say there could be other things that cause the produce, the rice, the wheat, the spelt, the barley, whatever, to dissipate. It doesn't only have to be mice. It could just be when produce is left out over time, things just start to evaporate or disappear or whatever it is. So it's not necessarily only because of the mice, and therefore the Chachamim's response to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri is that you do have to factor in these calculations because you can't have like a one size fits all for every single type of produce. Okay, the Gemara says Tana, Bamed Dvarim Amurim, She'irvan Imperosam, Aval Yichei Lo Keren Zavis, Omer Lo Hareshel Chalafanecha. Comes the Braisa and qualifies this entire Mishnah. When the Mishnah gives all these specific calculations for standard rates of decrease, that's assuming that the Shomer mixed together the produce he was watching with his own produce. However, if it's a case where he designated his own corner of the house for the produce he was watching, so then he could turn back to the owner and say, Hareshel Chalafanecha, take your produce back. And I'm not paying you anything. There is no standard rate of decrease that the shomer needs to pay. So the Gemara then asks, "V'chiervan in peros of my having lechse lidi de kamahavim." So hang on a second. Why does it make a difference that the shomer mixed together the peros, the produce, together with his own produce, meaning that was the only time that we said that the shomer now has to pay the standard rate of decrease? Why does that make a difference? The Gemara says, why can't we just figure out or see, in other words, how much of his own produce was there, how much produce he brought in, and then you'll just calculate the rate of decrease proportionally to however much produce was brought in from the guy that he was watching.
Why do you bring up he mixed his own produce in? And we always use the term
Well, no. Again. The Mishnah says, meaning again, the Mishnah says that you have to factor in various rates of decrease depending on the type of produce, right? When you're the shomer, when you return the produce after a year, you have to factor in the fact that there's going to be X amount that's not going to be there anymore, and then the shomer has to compensate. So the Gemara says, but that's only in a case where the shomer mixed everything together. If he kept the other guy's produce separate from his own, he got a separate room, a separate whatever, for the other guy's produce, then he can say, Hareshel Chalafanecha. The Gemara's question now is, why can you only say Hareshel Chalafanecha in that case where the guy designated a separate room for the other person's produce? Even if everything was mixed together, you should still be able to work backwards and do the math and figure out, in other words, how to divide the standard rate of decrease between your produce and the other guy's produce. Why is that so hard to do? So the Gemara says no. The Gemara says, Bibistopic, man, the case was that the shomer used the supplies from the produce that he was watching. Okay, so then Velech Sekama is topic. So again, do the math. Figure out how much did he use and then subtract that from and factor that into the rate of decrease. So the Gemara says no. The Lo Yadei Kama is topic. He doesn't know how much he used. So in these kinds of cases, when basically the shomer doesn't know, he wasn't cognizant enough of how much he was using of the other person's produce he was watching, you have to basically fall back on these standard calculations in the Mishnah. Okay, then we said Rabbi Yehuda Omer Im Haisa, Kama Mida Meruba, Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chanam Rabbi Yochanan Asara Korin, Tanya Nami Hachi, Kama Mida Meruba Asara Korin. So the Mishnah told us that according to Rabbi Yehuda, if the owner deposits a very significant quantity, then then the shomer does not have to return and pay the standard decrease. So the Gemara explains that that means at least 10 kor. If he deposits at least 10 kor, so then he does. So the shomer doesn't have to pay that amount. Tani Tana Kamei de Rav Nachman. Bame Dvarim Amurim Shemadad Lo Mitoch Gorno the Hechzer Lo Mitoch Gorno Avo Madad Lo Mitoch Gorno the Hechzer Lo Mitoch Beso Eino Yotzi Lo Chesronos Mipenei Shemosiros. Comes the Gemara and explains that when the Mishnah discusses all of these scenarios of calculations of the rates of decrease, that's only referring to the following case, where initially the produce was measured out by the owner in his threshing floor, and when the shomer, and when it comes time for the shomer to return the produce, he similarly measures the produce in his own threshing floor, because the assumption was that the weights and scales that were used on the threshing floor were all the same. They were all exactly identical. However, if initially the owner measured the produce in his own threshing floor, and now the shomer, upon returning the produce a year later, is using the scales and the weights in his own house, so then the halacha is that the shomer is not responsible to pay for the rates of decrease, because the scales and weights that were in one's house were much more exacting and precise than the ones on the threshing floor. And the assumption was that the owner was going to get back a little bit more than what he initially deposited, thereby obviating the need for factoring in all of these rates of decrease. The whole point of factoring in the rates of decrease was in case some of the produce dissipated, but here, if you're using more specific weights than what were initially used, you're going to make up for that difference anyway, and therefore the rates of decrease were not going to be employed in that scenario. So asks the Gemara, Amar Le, V'chi b'shuftanei askinan, D'yahave b'chayla rabba, V'shakle b'chayla zuta. Are we dealing with fools who measure with large scales and they pay back with small ones? Why would anyone do this? Why would anyone, use, less precise scales in one direction and more precise in the other? It makes no sense. So the Gemara says, no. Dilma biyamos ha-goren ka'amar. Bamed dvarim amurim shem madad lo biyamos ha-goren, vehechezer lo biyamos ha-goren, ava madad lo biyamos ha-goren, vehechezer lo biyamos ha-geshamim, eno motzi lo chisaro mipnei shemosiros. The Gemara has to clarify what it meant. The Gemara never meant that the guy was using the scales from the threshing floor and then the shomer was using the scales from his house. That's not what it meant. It meant that he was measuring at a time of the threshing floor, in the yamos ha-goren, which is basically at the time of the harvest. So in other words, the Gemara says that when you're measuring at the time of the harvest and then the guy comes back to collect the produce also at that same time, so then everything is going to be the same. But if the owner comes back to reclaim his produce during the Amos HaGeshamim, during the rainy season, during the winter time, so then you do not factor in these rates of decrease again, because the produce is going to increase. The produce is going to increase as a result of the rain, and therefore again, you don't factor in the rates of decrease. So Amar Le Rav Papa Li Abaye in Kain Lifka Kada. The Gemara says, okay, but hang on a second. If it's true that the reason why you don't factor in rates of decrease is because the owner is coming to reclaim his produce in the winter time when the produce is expanding because of the rain, so then any jugs or any barrels that are holding the produce should burst. All the produce should have expanded and all the barrels should burst. So the Gemara says, actually, that happened. And the Gemara says, in fact, one time that actually happened. There was an incident where the barrels all burst because of the because of the increase in the size of the produce. Or Gemara says, "Ibayasema Misha." Or you could say that the reason why the barrels are not bursting is because the produce was essentially compressed inside. So once you release it, so then you'll see that it actually did in fact increase in its size. Okay, says the Mishnah. Yotzi lo shtus liayin, Rabbi Yehuda omer chomesh. The Mishnah presents what appears to be a machlokas, although we'll see in the Gemara that there's really no machlokas here, but it seems like the Mishnah is presenting a machlokas regarding how do you calculate the decrease for wine. So in other words, let's say, for example, Reuven deposits, X amount of barrels of wine by Shimon, and now he's coming back a year later to reclaim his wine. Again, how do you factor in the rate of decrease for wine? So the Tanakhama seems to say it's 1/6, and Rabbi Huda seems to say it's 1/5. Again, we'll see in the Gemara that there's not really a machlokas about this. Then the Mishnah continues. Yoti lo shlosha lugin shemen lemeya, lug vamechza shmarim, lug vamechza bala. Let's say it was oil that was deposited. So the Mishnah says that you can factor in or you can subtract 3 lug of oil per every 100 lug. 1.5 lug to factor in the sediments that are on the bottom of the oil, and another 1.5 lug to factor in any oil that might have been evaporated into the walls of the cask. Again, the Gemara is going to clarify all of this. Then the Mishnah says, "Amhaya shemen mezukak eno yotzi lo shmarim." If the oil is refined, so then you do not factor in the sediments. You're not allowed to subtract the 1.5 lug to account for the sediments. Im hayu kan kanim yeshanim, eino yotzi lo bala. And if you're using older jugs, so then you also cannot subtract the lug and a half to factor in the absorption and the evaporation of the oil. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af hamocher shemen mezukak lachaveiro kol yamos hashana, hareza mekabel alav lug vamechta shmarim lemeya. Let's say you have a guy who's an oil salesman. A guy sells oil, throughout the year, and he sells refined oil. So the assumption is that you, as the buyer, have to assume that you're not getting 100% of pure refined oil. Even if you're supposedly buying refined oil, there's a baseline assumption that at least 1.5 lug out of 100 is going to be sediment, even if it's supposedly refined oil. Okay, so the Gemara points out, velo plige mar ki asrei u mar ki asrei ba asrei demar chafu bekira velo mayetz tvei ba asrei demar chafu bechufra u mayetz tvei. So the Gemara points out that for one of two reasons, there's really no machlokes in the beginning of the Mishnah between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yehuda regarding the rates of decrease for wine. In other words, the Mishnah seemed to present the machlokes about a sixth versus a fifth, but the Gemara says that it basically just depended on the various locales of where they lived. Either because in the place where the Tana Kama lived, they used to coat the barrels with wax, and wax was not quite as absorbent, whereas in the place where Rabbi Yehuda lived, they used to use pitch or tar, which was more absorbent, or maybe it had to do with the quality of earth, again, which was more or less absorbent. So it's really just like almost a technical question about what type of material were they using in the barrel. Okay, then the Gemara says, Ba'asri de Rabbi Yehuda, Ramu arbayim v'satne kuzei bedana. So in the place that Rabbi Yehuda lived, standard barrels of oil would hold 48 jugs. So 48 jugs of oil was the equivalent of one barrel. Azl dana b'shita zuze. And a barrel of oil, or 48 jugs, would go for 6 zuz. Paris Rav Yehuda shita shita bezuza. Rav Yehuda would then divide and sell the individual jugs for 6 zuz. Dal tlusin v'shita v'shita. Then he had a remaining 36 jugs, again, that he would sell for six zuz. Pashu le tresar. So now he had 12 jugs remaining. Dal taman yeshtuse. So he had to subtract another 8 jugs to account for the 1/6 rate of decrease that we keep on speaking about. Then pashu lehu arba. So Rabbi Yehuda had 4 jugs of oil remaining to make a profit. So out of the original 48 jugs of oil, his profit was 4 out of 48, or 1/12. 1/12 of the original was his profit. So asks the Gemara, the Ha'amar Shmuel, Ha'mistaker al yistaker Yoser al shtus. The Gemara says, hang on a second, isn't there a din? The Gemara tells us a little bit later in Masechet Bava Basra that there's a halacha that if a person is profiting, his whole business involved things that people need that are critical for their life, whether it's oil, whether it's water, bread, basically basic staples, things that are staples. The halacha is that a person is not allowed to profit more than a sixth. The problem is that Rabbi Yehuda is profiting even less than that. He's only profiting a 12th. So the question is, why didn't he bump up the profit a little bit more? He should have taken the equivalent of 8 jugs of oil in order to profit 1/6. Why is he only profiting a 12th? So says the Gemara, no. Ika gulfeyu shmaraya. The reason why Reb Yudo is only taking 1/12th of the original amount is because he had to factor in the amount of evaporation from the casks and the sediments, all the things that we spoke about earlier. So asks the Gemara, yachi nafish leitzfei mishtus. But once you start factoring those things in, now Reb Yudo's profit is actually more than a 6th, which is also a problem. So the Gemara says, no. Ika tirchei. So Rabbi Yehuda was charging, first of all, for the physical exertion that he had to go around selling all this oil. But in addition to that, he was also charging the amount for installing taps into the barrel. That was usually that required some kind of a professional to install taps into barrels. So Rabbi Yehuda was charging for that as well. Okay, then we said, "Hayashem and mezukak eno yotzi lo shmarin v'ha'i asher delo bala." The Mishnah told us that if you're selling refined oil, you're not allowed to subtract 1.5 lug to account for the sediments. And then also there is an additional 1.5 lug we mentioned because of the oil that basically evaporates into the walls of the cask. So the Gemara says that if you had, the Mishnah told us that if you had older jugs, so the assumption was that nothing is going to evaporate. The question is, what do you mean? It's impossible that you're not going to have at least a little bit of oil that's going to evaporate into the walls of the jug or of the barrel. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. Amar Rav Nachman b'mizu puffin. Shano, either we're talking about barrels that were coated with pitch or tar, so there was nothing that was going to evaporate into the walls of the barrel. Or you could suggest, no, even we're discussing barrels that are not coated with pitch, but once they're these old barrels that have already been used for oil hundreds of times before, once they've already been saturated with oil, nothing else is going to be absorbed into the walls of the barrel. Okay, then we said, Rabbi Huda Omer Af HaMokher Shemen Mezukah Klachavero Koyimos Hashana Harezeh Mekabel Alav Lug Vamechza Shmarim Lemeya. Even if you have a guy who sells refined oil generally throughout the year, the assumption is that you as the buyer should assume, if you're buying 100 lug of oil, that you're not getting, you know, again, 100% of pure oil. At least 1.5 of those lug is going to be sediment. Amar Abaye, kisha timtzelomar ledivrei Rabbi Yehuda mutter laarev shmarim ledivrei chachamim usher laarev shmar. Now the Gemara is going to present the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim as to whether it is permissible for me, as the guy who is trying to sell you this refined oil, can I lechachila go ahead and mix these sediments in, knowing that you as the buyer have no taina if there is 1.5 lug or less of sediments in the oil. Meaning, again, everyone agrees that the buyer has no claim if there's 1.5 sediments of if there's 1.5 lug of sediments. The question is, do I as the seller have the right to go out of my way to mix that in to make sure he's only getting his 98.5 lug of oil instead of the full 100 that he paid for? So the Gemara says it's machlokas. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's mutter for the seller to do such a thing, and the Chachamim disagrees. So the Gemara explains. L'divrei Rabbi Yehuda mutter la'arev shmarim, v'hainu taima demekabel, de'amar lei, ibay la'arulei lach, milo arvi lach, hashta nami kabil. So the logic behind Rabbi Yehuda, why he permits the seller to mix in lechachila, these sediments into the oil, is basically because he could say to the buyer, he says, well, I have every right to mix this in. You have no ability to, you know, to protest against this. So you have to accept it. That's the din. So the problem is, the Gemara says, Valeinu, why can't the buyer turn back to the seller and say to him, E arav klei hava mizdabin li, hashta mai yavid lei, l'chudin lo mizdabin li. The buyer could say to the seller the following. He says, it's one thing if you just mixed in the sediments to the oil and it's floating on the bottom and no one can see it. So I could pass that off. I could sell it myself as 100 lug and I could get my money's worth. I could make a little bit of a profit because it's really only 98.5 lug of pure oil. But the problem is, you are now giving me the sediments separately from the oil. I can't sell sediments by themselves. No one's going to buy sediments of oil on their own. So there's no way for me to profit off of that. So the Gemara says, no. Bivala bias askinan, denechale betzila. We're talking about a bala bias. We're not talking about a merchant. We're talking about a guy who's buying oil off of someone else in order to resell it. We're talking about a guy who's, in other words, he's the last stop. He's the guy who wants the oil, but he would prefer to have refined oil. So the Gemara says, okay, hang on a second. Velemale midelo arevasli achulei achaltli. Why can't the buyer say to the seller, the fact that you didn't mix the sediments in is an indication that you were mocha. Meaning, in other words, like this. In theory, you do have the right to mix in the 1.5 lug of sediments, but Ilamaisa, you didn't do it. You left the sediments out. Now you want to hand me the sediments separately. So maybe you have no right to do that. Maybe you were mocha your ability to mix in those 1.5 lug of sediments. To which the Gemara says, no. Rabbi Huda Latame, Delesle Mechila, Disnan, Machar lo esat semed, lo machar lo esat bakar, machar lo esat bakar, lo machar lo esat semed, Rabbi Huda Omer Hadamim Modian Ketzat Amar Lo Mechor Litzim Decha B'Masayim Zuz Hadavar Yadua She'ein Hatzemed B'Masayim Zuz V'Chachamim Omrim Ein Hadamim Raya. So the Gemara says that this is a machlokas in a Mishnah Maseches Bava Basra between Rabbi Huda and the Chachamim. In other words, according to Rabbi Huda, this concept of mechila, this notion that, yeah, in other words, because I didn't mix the sediments in, therefore you're mochel, your right to ever put them in, and now you have to give me the full 100 lug of oil. It's basically a non-starter according to Rabbi Huda. Why not? So the Gemara references a machlokas in a Mishnah in Bava Basra of Ayin Zayin about the following case. Let's say Shimon is trying to buy off of Reuven either a yoke that you put on top of a cow or the actual animal itself. So the question is, if he pays money for one, does he also acquire the other? If he pays for the yoke, does he get the cattle and vice versa? So according to the Tanna Kamma, if he buys the yoke, he gets the cattle. If he buys the cattle, he gets the yoke. In other words, it works both ways. The two are basically a package deal. And Rabbi Huda says that the money is going to inform us what exactly he was trying to acquire. For example, let's say he pays 200 zuz. So the Mishnah tells us that no one pays 200 zuz for the yoke. The yoke costs whatever, costs a couple of pennies. But the animal costs a lot of money. So if the guy is paying 200 zuz, it's obvious, says Rabbi Yehuda, that he's also trying to buy the animal. And the Chachamim disagree with that. The Chachamim say, nope, that ain't hadamim raya. You can't bring me a proof that just because the guy's paying, you know, some kind of an obscene amount of money, that he's also trying to buy the animal. So the Gemara explains. L'divrei Chachamim asur la'arev shmarim, v'haynu taima delo mekabel de amar le ibayis le aruve mi hava sharilach hashdanami lo mekabilna. Now again, the chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yehuda. They were the ones who said that the seller is not allowed to lechatchila mix the sediments into the mixture of oil, and therefore the reason why you as the buyer can turn around to the seller and say that you had no right to do this. It's not much for you as a seller to mix the sediments, and therefore I'm refusing to accept it. I paid for 100 lug of oil. I want my full 100 lug, not 98 and a half. So the Gemara says, "Amar li Rav Papa li Abaye Adarava, Ipcha Mistabra, L'divrei Chachamim Mutar La'arei Shmarim, V'hayinu Taima De Lo Mekabel, De Amar Lei, Mi De Lo Aravli, Achu Li Achalpli, L'divrei Rav Yehuda Asur La'arei Shmarim, V'hayinu Taima De Mekabel, De Amar Lei, Ibai La'aruve, Lo Shari Li La'aruve Lach, Kabuli Lo Mekabal, Zivon V'zavin, Tagra Ikrei." So Rav Papa flips everything on its head. Rav Papa says that you can reverse these opinions. You can argue the following, that the Chachamim were the ones who said that it's permissible for the seller to mix the sediments into the oil, and the reason why the buyer would refuse to accept it is because of the concept of mechila. Again, it was only Reb Yehuda who was the one who denied this idea of mechila, but the Chachamim, based on that Mishnah in Bava Basra about the guy who's buying the cattle and the yoke, they seem to subscribe to it, which means that if the guy left the sediments out of the oil, he was mochel, and the buyer now has legitimate claim and says, you now owe me the full 100 lug of oil, not the 98 and a half anymore. And Reb Yehuda, again, in the second version of the Gemara of Reb Papa, Reb Yehuda is going to be the one who says that you're not allowed to mix sediments in, because the seller can say to the buyer that even if I wanted to, I'm not allowed to, and he says, I'm not going to accept the oil from you, because what kind of a salesman would I be if I bought an item and then sold it for the same price? I'm not making any profit. So he says that, therefore, because of that, you owe me the full amount. I didn't pay for 98 and a half, like I paid for the full 100. Okay, then the verse says, Tana. Echad halokeach ve'echad hamafkid lefkatim. My lefkatim. Ilema ki hechi delokeach lo mekabab katim. Mafkid nami lo mekabab katim. Ve'lemolei p'katach mayyavadut. Now the Gemara quotes a very, very similar type of a case here, where the Gemara is comparing a guy who's purchasing oil to a person who deposits oil by someone, and now when the shomer is returning the oil, you have all this residue to contend with. Again, it's very similar to the sediments, but you're contending with all the residue from the oil. So the Gemara says, what exactly does that mean? So the Gemara says, maybe you'll argue the following, that the same way that that when I buy oil, I'm refusing to accept the oil with the residue. I want pure, you know, refined, unadulterated oil. I don't want all the other stuff mixed in. So perhaps the shomer will make the same argument. So the Gemara says, the problem is, why can't the shomer just turn back to the owner and say, listen, this is your oil. I didn't touch the oil. It's not like I'm buying oil off of you. So you gave me oil with the sediments in it, or with all the stuff in it. So too, you know, in other words, I'm going to return exactly what you handed to me. So the Gemara says, right, Eloki hechi demafkin mekabab katim, lokeach nami mekabab katim. So it must be the reverse. The same way that the shomer accepts the oil that he receives with the residue, again, because it's not really his oil. It's just sitting in his house. So the same should be true for the buyer. The buyer is supposed to accept any residue that comes along with the oil. The problem is, says the Gemara, umi mekabel lokeach pkatim v'hasanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer lo amru shemen achur elo lemocher b'vat shahare lokeach mekabel alav lugva mechta shmarim belo pkatim. The Gemara says that it's not true, because the Gemara quotes from a brisa that this idea, this notion of purchasing murky oil, purchasing oil that's not refined, is only going to be on the mocher, on the seller. He has to take the loss for that. Because when I'm buying oil, the only thing that I'm expected to forego is that 1.5 lug of sediments that we've been discussing up until now. But I'm not, in other words, I'm not expected to also say, yeah, I'll also take all of the residue and all the other stuff that's on the bottom of the oil. That was never included. So the Gemara says, you're right, lo kashya, hadi yahev lezuzeh besishrei v'kashakil mine benisan kimida desishrei, hadi yahev lezuzeh benisan v'kashakil mine benisan kimida denisan. The Gemara explains the discrepancy as follows. The question of whether the guy who's buying oil is expected to also accept the residue that comes along with the oil is going to depend largely on what time of year he's purchasing the oil. Because in Tishrei is when the oil is when the olives are first harvested, when you produce it into oil, so the oil is still very murky, but the olives are also plentiful during that time, and therefore they're much cheaper. Whereas in Nisan, when everything is being produced, it's much more expensive. But on the other hand, the oil is also expected to be refined at that point. So if someone is purchasing oil during Tishrei and they want it, and in other words, the assumption is that there's also going to be residue there because it was just harvested. The olives have not yet been refined into real pure olive oil. In contrast, when it comes to a person who's purchasing at the rate or at the oil that's going to be used for Nissan. So the assumption is that it's already been refined. So then you only have that 1.5 lug of sediments. But then at that point, if there's also residue there, the buyer has a legitimate taina, and he can say to the seller, I never expected there to also be residue in that oil. Okay, says the Mishnah. Hamavkin chavis etzel chavero velo yichdu la bailim makom. So Reuven deposits a barrel by Shimon, a barrel of whatever. It doesn't matter what's in the barrel, but he doesn't designate a specific place in Shimon's house for the barrel to stay. He just says, do me a favor, wash my barrel for the next month. And then what happens? The Mishnah says, v'tiltula v'nishtabra. So then Shimon carries the barrel, and the barrel breaks. So in mitoch yado nishbara, if the barrel breaks while in Shimon's hand, litzorko chayav litzorka patra. Then it depends why he's moving the barrel. If he's moving the barrel just because it's kind of in the way, and he wants the clear space for his own stuff, so then he's going to be chayav. But if he's moving it because he's trying to prevent the barrel from being damaged by something else, and it happens to slip out of his hand, so then he's going to be putter. However, in mishehinicha nishpira, if the barrel broke after he already set it down on the ground, being litzorko putter, then he's going to be putter even if he moved it for his own sake, even if he moved, just to clear space. However, yichdu la habayle makom v'tiltula v'nishpira, being mitoch yada uvein mishehinicha litzorko chayav litzorka putter. However, if the owner designated a place in the house for the barrel to stay, so then the only criteria that makes a difference as to whether the shomer is chayav is why was he moving the barrel? Was he moving it because he just wanted to clear space? If that's the case, so then he's for sure chayav because the owner already designated a place in the shomer's house. But if he moved it because he was trying to prevent the barrel from breaking or getting damaged, so then in fact he's going to be put. Okay, so asks the Gemara, Hamani Rabbi Yishmaeli de Amar lo ba'ina das bailim. Tisanya, Hagoniv Talemina either the Selamina Kis, Lemakom Shaganav Yachzir Divri Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Tsarif Das Bailim. The Gemara says that our Mishnah can only be true according to Rabbi Ishmael. The Gemara makes reference to a machlokas that appears at the very end of Masechet Bava Kama between Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva about the following case. Let's say I go ahead and I steal something from someone, and I steal a lamb from their flock, I steal a coin from their purse. The question is, can I just go and return the item that I stole to the place I found it and just basically run home scot-free and not tell anyone that I stole anything? Or do I actually have to inform the owner? So that's machlokas. According to Rabbi Shmuel, as long as I put the item back where I found it, or where I stole it from, I'm fine. And if anything happens to the item after the fact, that's no longer my problem. And according to Rabbi Akiva, you are fully liable for anything that happens unless you inform the owner that you stole the item and now you put it back in its rightful place. So hopefully tomorrow we're going to analyze how this machlokas plays into our Mishnah.